Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning. Nothing But Net channel, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball and the NBA at FanRag Sports and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, Bulls writer at FanRag Sports and the host of the 312 show on 1590 WCGO here in Chicago. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. New text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Make sure you're hitting us up there. We're doing mailbag today, so I'm going to take all the questions that you might have been sending to us over the past week or so. I'm going to try to dive into as many of those as possible, but we want to hear voicemails. Give us a few more voicemails, especially leading up to the NBA lottery. I think that's going to be one of the funnest times for us, really, to get a reaction of what Bulls fans are thinking and feeling going into the offseason. So make sure you're hitting us up there at 331-979-1369. Matt, how are you? Are you nervous at all here with seeing what you saw last night in LeBron? I told you, don't bet against LeBron.
Jimmy, what do you think of the Raptors so far?
Doo-doo.
Jordan, I feel like friggin' Ron Burgundy this morning, jumping into the bear pit. I knew it was dumb to pick the Raptors, despite all of the things in their favor, and despite the fact that they look like the much better collective basketball team. Never trust the Raptors in the playoffs. Never, ever, ever. You were sitting here yesterday, and I said, I think this is finally the time. I mean, if not now, when can the Raptors get past LeBron and this garbage team that he has around him? And last night, for the first 40 minutes of that game, I'm thinking, okay, like, the Raptors aren't even playing their best, but they have this game under control. They're going to start off with a win in game one, and here we go. Raptors in six, totally happening. Great. And in the last 4 or 5 minutes of that fourth quarter, the Raptors went 0 for 11 to finish the fourth, including how many bunny layups did Jonas Valanciunas miss? Oh, my
yeah,
God.
Wow.
Oh, my God. They couldn't buy a basket. And the Cavs role players actually show up. LeBron talked after the game saying it was probably one of my worst games of the playoffs, probably one of my worst games of the season. It was still like he had like 28 and, you know, a bunch of rebounds and a bunch of assists.
I was just going to say, oh, worst game in the playoffs
for
LeBron is a near triple-double.
Here's the thing. He hit that big shot to tie it late with like under a minute left. But in the fourth quarter and overtime, LeBron was a combined 3 for 20. 3 for 20 in the fourth and OT from LeBron, and the Raps still couldn't close? Seriously? Unbelievable. I'm just sitting here this morning thinking, and I was, well, you know, I was live tweeting that game last night, and I was like, of course. Classic Raptors, total chokers. I am so mad at myself for thinking that despite the garbage around LeBron right now, that they were actually going to win this series. I have no faith. I'm already off the Raptors bandwagon. And like, you can call me a flip-flopper if you want. I don't care. They do not deserve to have anyone's support outside of Toronto thinking that they can come back from the mental brick that they just got smacked across the face with. because they knew they had that game wrapped up and they choked it away, and it just folds right back into the narrative that everybody thinks that Lowry and DeRozan are playoff chokers and they don't believe they can beat LeBron, regardless of who's playing around him. In my opinion, this series is over. It's over. The Cavs won.
Oh, man. That's quite a flip in 24 hours, Matt. I will admit to you that.
It's because I'm so mad at myself for picking the Raptors.
I told you yesterday, and like, this is what I was arguing with a lot of my friends about too. I'm just like, how can you pick against LeBron? He's one of the greatest players in NBA history, and he hasn't proved, and I know we've had this conversation over and over again, and fans love to have it every single year. He's been to 7 straight finals. And every year we talk about this. When is LeBron going to get eliminated? When is this finally going to be the year? And I told you yesterday, what did I say? I said, I don't believe that the Cavs role players will play as bad as they did in that opening series. And in game one, they played really well against the Raptors.
Right. They got 19 from Korver, 20 from JR, 16 from Green, 14 and 12 from Thompson. The role players actually played like role players.
And JR Smith, like, props to him, man. He 5 for 6 from the three-point line, and he knocked down a couple daggers when they really needed them. But like you had said, I think it's crazy that LeBron admits that this might be one of his worst games, especially like you had said, 3 for 20 in that final stretch to just push this game to overtime. Like, the Raptors completely choked this away. My biggest thing, I have a couple things about this game, Matt. One is, Was it Jonas Valanciunas? Was he not sure how much time was left on the clock? Like, dude, you are 7 feet tall with what, a 7'7", 7'8" wingspan? Get up and dunk the ball. Like, they were tapping it back and forth across that rim, and like, at the end when the buzzer goes out, he's like holding his head, like, what have I done? I missed like 3 layups in a row. Dunk the damn ball. Like, that is the most infuriating thing, I think, out of anything. Is like, these guys are 7'1", like, you see them dunking all the time, and then in crucial times where you're literally under the basket, nobody else was there, and he's deciding to tip it around the rim instead of just grab the ball and dunk it. And I don't know if that is a testament to he didn't know how much time was left on the clock, but it's like, they rushed so many of their shots late in that game. And the other thing too, where the hell was DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry at the end of that game? And in overtime, how can you consider yourself 2 star studs in this league and be at the top of the Eastern Conference and you want nothing to do with the ball at the end of the game? Like, what kind of superstars is that? Like, you don't deserve to be called a superstar if you don't want the ball at the end of the game. You're not willing to take a shot. Instead, you're going to go to Fred VanVleet? Are you kidding?
VanVleet. At the end of regulation and at the end of overtime, I mean, I don't know if it was a play that Dwayne Casey drew up. And yes, he got an open look, but VanVleet is a bench player, and you know, he got a lot of praise, especially down the stretch of the regular season, for being a key, important piece of that Raptors bench. And it's not like he's a scrub. He can play, but that's the guy? It was either VanVleet or Serge Ibaka jacking threes in crunch time of a close playoff game. What the hell are Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan doing? I don't care what kind of play you have to draw up if you're Dwayne Casey. Cool. Like, you know, you got to drive and kick out to VanVleet or you got to drive and kick out to Ibaka. Neither of those guys should be taking those shots. You let Lowry or DeRozan go ISO. I'm sorry, clear out their side of the court and let them go ISO. And for once, prove that they have the stones to make a big shot, a game-winning shot in a playoff game. The fact that it was Ibaka and VanVleet jacking up threes at the end of that game is an embarrassment for the Raptors. An embarrassment.
The other thing, too, is for the Cavaliers in terms of embarrassments. How about Jordan Clarkson and Rodney Hood? Jordan Clarkson played 12 minutes in this game. Rodney Hood played 16 minutes in this game. Larry Nance Jr. I think he got in for like less than a minute. And even in the box score, it still says a DNP. It blows my mind. These three players who were key additions at the trade deadline can come in and be so awful in that first round and then have such a minimal role in this win too. Like, we talk about how we feel like LeBron had dragged that Cavaliers team through that first round. It just blows my mind, and I would be super pissed off if I was LeBron, that you went out and got some of these guys and thought that this was going to help you, like, give you some new energy in terms of young players, and instead you've got Kyle Korver and J.R. Smith and George Hill and Jeff Green, playing the majority of the minutes in this game, trying to hold up and bolster through this second round. I think it's just kind of embarrassing for Jordan Clarkson, for Rodney Hood, and for Larry Nance to...
Well, yeah, and I mean, we saw some Nance iso ball in that Pacer series, and it was all a train wreck.
It was awful. Absolutely awful.
Apparently, Ty Lue remembered that Tristan Thompson is on his roster and he is allowed to play him. Where the hell was Tristan in that Pacer series?
Right?
Seriously.
No, you're right.
14 and 12 off the bench last night, 5 for 8 from the field, 4 of 4 at the charity stripe, 9 offensive rebounds from Tristan. 9.
I look at that.
What were they doing not using Tristan Thompson?
And Tristan Thompson, too, like, I understand from Ty Lue's aspect, too, because it's like you, it's kind of weird. It's like week-by-week basis is like, what are you going to get out of Tristan Thompson? And when he decides to show up and actually play, he had an important role, especially in this last game one. Like, I felt like there were a few important possessions down in that fourth quarter and even into overtime where Tristan Thompson was underneath the bucket grabbing important rebounds. So he was an important part of that game late. That's my thing is, like, what are you going to get out of him, though? Like, it's almost game-by-game basis of trying to figure out whether Tristan Thompson is going to show up or not. And you can see it. Like, there are the flashes why Tristan Thompson got paid. Like, that's why LeBron wanted him around for a long time, and I don't think LeBron has really seen that, or anybody on this Cavaliers team has seen that in a long time. One other thing that I want to touch on real quick is Kevin Love. Is it just to the point where Kevin Love is so beat up at this point where he's just kind of being dragged by LeBron through all of this? His production in terms of points, like, he's supposed to be like the second best scorer on this team. And to come out of a playoff round with only 7 points, granted, he did have 13 rebounds and played some pretty decent defense, but 3 for 13, 1 for 4 from 3, and only 7 points and a minus 7 in the plus minus. Is that just kind of an attrition to all these injuries kind of adding up and all the mileage on Kevin Love? Or is this just a lack of playing up to his potential? Which one do you think this more so is for Kevin Love than anything else?
Yeah, I think it's kind of getting overlooked. And I can't remember. It was either Brian Windhorst or Dave McMenamin, you know, two guys who spent a lot of time covering the Cavs for ESPN, who was talking on a show recently about the Kevin Love thumb injury. And how people are just kind of saying, like, dude, what's up with Kevin Love? Why is he just, you know, not shooting well, not playing well? Been a total non-factor in these playoffs so far. He's kind of re-injured that thumb, or at least banged up that thumb, a couple of times in the Cavs' first 8 playoff games since coming back from the thumb injury. And I think that there is, you know, whoever it was Wendy or McMenamin was saying, there's a huge factor that people aren't talking about, which is that Kevin Love's playing with a busted hand, and it might not be his shooting hand, but even just simple things like, you know, getting the grip on the ball, palming the ball, feeling comfortable handling the ball, even just if as a support hand when you're going through your shooting motion, that's clearly something that's bothering Kevin Love right now. As you said, 3 for 13. We've seen all different kinds of Kevin Love since he's come to Cleveland, in good playoff performances, in bad playoff performances. He's usually the scapegoat when things don't go well, and he has not been good in these playoffs so far, but I feel like a lot of people are glossing over the fact that the guy's clearly playing hurt.
I'm totally with you there, and I think that in itself, too, hurts LeBron as well, and you more so, I don't know... And I'm curious if LeBron went to some of these older guys, George Hill, Kyle Korver, J.R. Smith, Jeff Green, Tristan Thompson, and basically told them, hey, we're not getting anything out of our young guys here. And probably even talked to Kevin Love. Like, Kevin Love is, I feel like at this point, his wingman on this team and has been for quite some time since Kyrie left. I would say that they went to those guys and were like, you know, if we're trying to get back to the Eastern Conference Finals, I'm going to need you guys to do everything you can, because I'm not getting anything out of my young guys. Like, we're not going to get anything from Jay Clarkson. We're not getting anything from Rodney Hood. Larry Nance has been a no-show. So I need to be able to lean on you guys as much as possible while still trying to drag this team. And I feel like if Kevin Love was 100% healthy, LeBron, there wouldn't be so much pressure on LeBron. You would have another viable option. And I think, like you had said, I think that story and that kind of unknown about Kevin Love has been gone kind of on the wayside, and it's been all about LeBron. But it's really like, where has Kevin Love been, especially from the offensive side of the ball? I think in that Pacers series too, he had a couple nice games, but overall it's like, you think of Kevin Love, I think of him as like a 25 to 27 point a night type of guy, especially capitalizing on times where LeBron is double teamed, LeBron can't get open, LeBron is not even on the floor. So I think if the Cavaliers want to strong arm their way through this series, they're going to need a little bit more from Kevin Love, and that's whether or not he's 100% healthy, and I don't know if he's ever going to be 100% healthy in this playoffs.
Yeah, I think it's a fair point if you're talking about the importance of Love moving forward if the Cavs have any shot at winning this series. Because, look, as much as, and, you know, I was mostly just a joking mood because I was so mad at myself for picking the Raptors, but the Cavs can obviously win this series, and they got a huge boost to confidence because they absolutely stole that game. Stole it. But LeBron, even though he said, you know, not a great game, it was maybe just the human version of LeBron instead of the unhuman version, 26, 13, and 11. That's still a pretty awesome freaking stat line from LeBron. And Korver, Smith, Green, and Thompson all showed up, all had double digits, all were positive, net positives on the court. What is the likelihood for, you know, games 2, 3, 4, 5 moving forward that the Cavs role players all play as well as they played last night? And I'm not talking about Kevin Love. I'm talking about those four other guys. Because the Raptors, you know, if Valanciunas makes a couple of missed layups, or as you said, just go up and dunk the ball, if they don't give the last couple of possessions to Van Vliet and Ibaka, as poorly as the Raps played through some parts of that game, they still would have won, and won fairly easily. They could have won by 10 plus last night if they didn't totally screw the pooch. If that is the Cavs barely squeaking out a win with LeBron going 26-13-11, and four of his role players stepping up and playing some of the best ball they've played, better than they played at any point during that Cavs series, and the Cavs barely win, the Raptors, looking at it logically, should still be coming out on top of this series. But again, that's all out the window now, because the Raptors choked, they know they just choked, and they have a fear of choking moving forward.
We got to take a short break here. When we come back, we'll recap the Warriors game from last night, Warriors-Pelicans, as well as take your mailbag questions to wrap up the show. Got a couple other interesting notes and news as well for you, so stay here with us on Locked On Bulls. We'll be back in 60 seconds.
Follow Locked On Bulls on social media. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. And on Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnChiBulls. Stay up to date with everything Chicago Bulls at LockedOnBulls.com. And subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts.
All right, so as we come back from break, we had a little bit of a technical difficulty. So Matt won't be joining me for the final segments. We're going to take your mailbag questions. I'm going to take your mailbag questions here. Remember, you can submit them at 331-979-1369. You can leave us voicemails and texts at that line, or tweet at us at LockedOnBulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. We had a ton of questions, so I'm just going to try and run through as many as possible here in the next 10 minutes. See if I can touch bases with not only the NBA draft, but some free agency stuff. And just some hypothetical things that somebody had brought up in the case of Michael Jordan. So I want to touch on first the draft. This question comes from the 203. It says, "Hey guys, Devin from Connecticut here, wanting to start a discussion about the current prospects around the Pelicans pick at the 22 spot in the draft. What's your guys' take on Jacob Evans, if any? Looking at his college stats, it seems like a great 3 and D type of wing, high upside on his defense too. Who will most likely be available around 22? In my opinion, I know this isn't a popular take, but I would rather the Bulls get Bamba with a 6. And I know this isn't a popular take, but I'd rather the Bulls get Bamba at 6 and a 3 and D wing at 22. So to dive into this question, and thanks again, Devin, for sending that in. I was interested too. I was kind of diving around to see what other people were saying that the Bulls might take in these mock drafts. And, you know, you could go through 40 or 50 other mock drafts and find 30 different opinions at where somebody's going to take. I think two people that I had in mind, and it's all going to depend on who they take 6. If they go with a wing or if they go with a guard or a big man, I feel like it's going to shape kind of what they take at 22, or at least I would think so if they take somebody like Mohamed Bamba, or they decide to take a guy like Michael Porter Jr., or somebody slides down like Marvin Bagley Jr., or, you know, they get lucky and they end up in the top three with the slight chance that they do have with the lottery coming up. So that could be a possibility as well. So you don't want to count out any of those options. Obviously, if they're going to pick at six, I'm thinking if they take a forward or a wing type of player, they can play the three or the four, someone like Michael Porter Jr., or if they decide that he's off the board and they don't want to take Mohamed Bamba and they take somebody like Mikal Bridges, I think an interesting pick is Mitchell Robinson. Mitchell Robinson, for those that don't know him, he was a player who was originally committed to go to Western Kentucky, and then there was some stuff about the NCAA and a scandal going on. There were some rumors about Western Kentucky being involved in that. So he decided to forego and not play this year in college basketball, forego all of the spotlights, the attention that could drive him, and it's hurt his stock. I mean, people were talking about him being a top five, top seven talent in the 2018 draft, 2019 draft, if he had went and played college for a year, and there was even comparisons of him and Michael Porter Jr., obviously Mitchell Robinson being a seven-footer is a little bit more dynamic, a little bit bigger in some cases, but if they're going to take a wing, I would like to see the Bulls maybe, if he slides down, Mitchell Robinson, they're looking to sort of secure at least a competition at the five with Robin Lopez maybe mentoring. But the questions with Cristiano Felicio and whether or not they bring Noah Vonleh back and seeing what they're going to try and do with that front court, I think is going to be an interesting dynamic. But if they want to take a big guy somewhere in this first round, a young guy that maybe is a project player, which Mitchell Robinson would be with a ton of upside, if he slides all the way down to 22, I think that's a guy that the Bulls could take a look at. Like, there's some mock drafts talking about him being anywhere picked between 23 and 26, and then there's mock drafts talking about his stock increasing all the way to the lottery. So I think it's going to depend a lot on the NBA combine for him. But if the Bulls do end up taking a guy like Mohamed Bamba, I think Jacob Evans is certainly in the conversation. There's other guys too. The guy from Ohio State, Kata Bates Diop, is one of them as well. But I was looking at Jacob Evans's numbers, obviously a 6'6 player, guard junior from the University of Cincinnati and originally from Baton Rouge. He's a lifetime 38-39% shooter from three. It seems like he's increased that a little bit in his final year. He went from 42% last year to shooting just 37% this year. He's a guy that I think the Bulls could take a chance on. I mean, I'd like to see what some of these guys do in the NBA combine and see what some of these players really have to say, because there's going to be a lot of fluidity with some of these guys going, I don't know, sliding down into the draft. And really, I think the biggest takeaway is figuring out who the Bulls draft with that number six pick. And I mean, we were even talking about the possibility of the Bulls using that 22nd pick to try and move up. Now, where they would move up or what they would take on is still a question. So I think there's a lot of things that they can do at 22. But if they decide to stay there and they draft a guy like Michael Porter Jr. or Mikal Bridges at number six or wherever they would take them, I feel like Mitchell Robinson would be a pretty solid player to talk about if he slides down to that 22nd pick. But a lot of movement, a lot of things could happen with this. But thanks for that question. Bear in mind, let me get through the question and then let me preface it with this is never going to happen, but let me just touch on it really quick because we were talking about the Thunder before. So it says, rumors that the Thunder want to trade Melo. Would you take Melo for picks? And if you do, how many picks? I believe he is in the last year of his contract, so we would be still have our cap availability for the summer of 19. The first thing is, I don't think the Thunder aren't giving away picks in order to just get rid of Melo. I think if the summer turns out to be ugly, there's a couple different things that the Oklahoma City Thunder can do. First, they can stretch out his contract over 3 years in a buyout, which is going to be like a $9.5 million cap hit for the next 3 years, which is probably like worst case scenario. I mean, if they wanted to just outright buy him, he's owed $28 million next year. And for Carmelo Anthony, he's laughing at them. He's like, yeah, obviously I'm going to opt in. It depends on how badly the Thunder are wanting to move on from his contract. I think it's going to depend a lot on what Paul George decides to do, and that makes sense. Like, if Paul George decides to stay with the Thunder and wants to sign long term, it's going to be him and Russell. If they can find a way to move on from Melo, use that money elsewhere to sign other guys to build, sort of build that Thunder team up, I think they do it, but I don't know what they're going to package in. And look, the Oklahoma City Thunder don't even have their first round pick this year. It's going to the Minnesota Timberwolves at 20. So next year they have their first round pick. They have a couple second round picks, but like, I just don't see it working out. They're not going to package anything. I think ultimately they're just going to try to do a buyout, sort of what the Bulls paid out Dwayne Wade. That's sort of what it's going to look like for Melo. And Melo said he wouldn't even agree to coming off the bench. Now, whether he caves in on that or not will be remain to be seen, but it'll depend on how much he gets bought out for. But like, it's hard for me to believe that Melo is going to get a starting spot somewhere else unless he wants to go play for a trash team and make, I don't know, $4, $5, $6 million from that team plus his buyout next year. Like, sure, he could go start on a team that's going nowhere or looking for a veteran just to fill the seats. Sure. I mean, Melo could probably do that. But whether or not he's actually going to like be on a playoff team or anything like that, I think those are pipe dreams now if he thinks he's going to start on a playoff team. So that's out the window. But I think maybe Melo caves in a little bit and says, all right, maybe, you know what, I'll come off the bench and play sort of that role now. So he's going to have to pick one or the other. And I think, you know, Dwayne Wade had to have this similar thought to himself this year. You know, he's like, whether or not he'll come off the bench for the Bulls, he said absolutely not. Turns out he did that in Cleveland and then in Miami as well. So he took the money and decided that he wanted to try being a starter somewhere else and then maybe coming off the bench when that didn't work for the Cavaliers. So yeah, he did that. So Melo could have the similar experience, but yeah, no, that's not going to happen. Like the Bulls wouldn't be able to get any picks for anything like that. So I just, in a perfect world, I think Melo's just going to get bought out and those two pair off ways. So no relation of what the Bulls would do in that situation. All right, this final question comes from the 312. It says, hey guys, love the show. Do you guys believe that MJ's legacy in Chicago steers top free agents away from this team? Think pre with Rose Butler and Noah, and then now post all of those guys. Do you guys think this is a concern? Why don't free agents want to come to Chicago? Thanks. I think this is a conversation that's been ongoing for a while. I mean, he touched on it pre-Rose. Not a lot of free agents wanted to come here. It was guys that were past their prime. You think Ben Wallace, you think some of the names before Rose was here, and then even with Rose. I mean, you had Joakim Noah, you had Jimmy Butler, young Jimmy Butler on the rise. You had Derrick Rose as well, and the Bulls swung and missed. I mean, multiple times. They swung and missed multiple times. They swung and missed on LeBron James and Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh and guys like Carmelo Anthony in 2014, which, I mean, low-key, Carmelo Anthony did us a favor by not signing that contract. But outside of that, like, players that they were swinging at top free agent talent just ended up not wanting to come here. They flirted with coming here, and I don't know. It's a good point to bring up, too. I wonder if players now, I don't know if they want to pave their own legacy the way Michael Jordan paved it, the way LeBron has done it with Cleveland, maybe there's some sense that they don't want to have the pressure of following the footsteps of one of the greatest players of all time. Some maybe use that as a motivation factor, and I think Jimmy Butler, in that sense, tried to use it as a motivation factor. It sounds like early on Zach LaVine wants to use that as a motivation factor, but I can see it. Like, there's also other things that go into it and why Chicago might not be the best destination for free agents. At least it hasn't been foreseen that way. I think the one thing, main thing, is the front office. Like, the front office has not had a good relationship with some of the stars that have been in and out of this city. It's been well known. And while they're trying to sort of restructure the way that looks and the culture that's going on and try to rebrand themselves, I mean, that still lingers on. Like, I mean, it was less than a year ago that Jimmy Butler's trainer came out and said that he knew drug dealers that were more trustworthy than them. Like, there's things like that are said after players leave here that are upset about the way things are run, and the way that they're treated and how they feel like they are towards the organization. So that's happened before with star players, and, you know, that's something else too. Like, the players are going to look at that, and players talk to each other. So I think it's a combination of the stacking up of missteps by the front office. It's Michael Jordan's legacy certainly probably plays a factor into that. But this is the third largest market in the country, the third largest market in the NBA. Like, there's hundreds of millions of people watching. This is a market that a lot of players should want to play in, but there are factors like, you know, maybe I'll go out down and make somewhere similar the same money down in Miami, tax-free, state tax-free, and I'm living on a beach for 8 months out of the year. So there's things like that that factor in too. So I think the one shot that the Bulls really have in landing free agents is making sure that one of these three guys turns out to be a star. All you need really to really lure some of these free agents, and that's not even saying that any of these guys will come here, but you at least need one of these guys to turn out, whether that's Chris Dunn, Lauri Markkanen, or Zach LaVine. And you could even throw the number six pick in there too this year, and maybe some of those first round picks. Like, those guys are going to be an important factor, especially if Zach LaVine's going to be here long term. Lauri Markkanen will be on his rookie deal, and Chris Dunn still has a few more years for them to figure that out. But those guys are going to be important plays to figure out how they can draw and lure some of these free agents to come to Chicago and play with these guys. These guys got to hit. One or two of these guys have to hit. So that's going to be important. So that's why we go back to, like, this summer is so important for their development and chemistry as a team, because not only is it good for them on the court and for the development as the team and becoming more competitive, but trying to lure other pieces to take that next step. And we'll see that maybe in the next 2 or 3 years. But it's going to be a slow process. Like, Zach LaVine, Chris Dunn, and Lauri Markkanen could have a really nice season next year, and free agents still don't want to come here in 2019 because they don't think that they're ready. That could certainly happen. So that's why I'm saying, like, we talked about it too a couple episodes ago, that, like, free agency might not be the big thing in 2019. It might not be till 2020, where if things, you know, don't take an exceptional step next year, the Bulls might wait. Maybe they'll sign one guy or two guys that are more role player style players than maybe a huge splash on a free agent. That's if they swing and they're able to hit. So there's a lot of factors to go into it, but I think shooting for 2020 sounds more realistic in terms of, all right, we're in play for some of these young guys. Let's see what we got and see who wants to come here to play with alongside some of these young talented players that maybe the Bulls will have. And at that point, hopefully they're developed to the point where they're starting to peak. So we'll see. It'll be definitely interesting. But I think your point does go without saying. I mean, Michael Jordan's legacy here, it does have a factor, but you could look at other teams around the league, like the Lakers, with, you know, the plethora of stars that they've had come in and out of that organization. The Boston Celtics, same thing. Players still want to go there, so I think there is some element to it, but that's not a complete and 100% complete deal breaker for a lot of players in this league. Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can follow us on social media at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. And subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Jordan Malley, for Matt Peck, we'll be back with a full episode for you tomorrow. Remember to listen to us on Dash Radio tomorrow morning. For Matt Peck, for Jordan Malley, Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.